This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation. True owners, caretakers, and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. until 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Grab your pants.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to 3CR Breakfast on Tuesday, the 9th of September, 2025. Thank you to the Radioactive Show, 3CR's national program on nuclear peace and energy issues. My name is Fung, and in the studio today, we've got Elena and Juliet. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
We were talking this morning about the rain. I don't know if anyone has looked outside, but yeah, it's just like a soft but... I don't know, consistent.
Wet.
So wet.
Very drenching.
Rain. Yeah, so hopefully, well, if you're riding to work today, ride safely. I don't know how it was for you, Juliet, this morning coming in.
Yeah, a little bit slippery.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was that thing as well where I was like, oh, it's just a drizzle, like I'll be fine. And then when I got here, I was like completely... just soaked.
Yeah, I walked in and I was like to Elena, how about this weather? And you were just like, it's so wet. I'm like, that's the perfect way to describe it. Yeah, I think we're coming into like a transition of seasons and weather. You know, it's been kind of warm. So yeah, it's just this odd time when you're not really sure what's happening. But on to other news, we've got a massive show for everyone today. So we'll have a chat about who we'll be speaking to on today's program. And we're starting off with Jess, who is from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. And she'll be on the show this morning to talk about the upcoming picket that they've called for to protest the National Employment Services Association's annual conference, which is taking place next week. So that's coming up first. Then we'll be joined by Zelda from Disrupt Wars, who will reflect on last week's snap action held outside the Indonesian embassy, calling for an end to the persecution of West Papuans and the release of all political prisoners.
And then at 7:45, we're going to be speaking to Laura Billings, the Campaigns Director at Parents for Climate, a climate advocacy org which represents parents, carers and kids with that goal of ensuring a safe future for younger generations.
And then at 8 o'clock, we'll be joined by Jamie Jeffrey, who is from Elbert out of Victoria. And Jamie joins us on the show again to talk about the new Future Fund report that they'll be launching tomorrow night at Trades Hall, along with a screening of the film To Kill a War Machine.
And then finally, at 8:15, we're going to be chatting to Rochelle Francis, who is from Democracy in Colour. And we're going to be chatting about the threats of the recent so-called March for Australia, as well as the commitments needed from our governments moving forward to promote a more inclusive democracy.
So a huge show for today. So keep it locked to 3CR. We'll be back with the news headlines in just a moment.
Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty gritty now.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast on 855 AM, 3CR Digital and on 3cr.org.au. And these are the news headlines for Tuesday, the 9th of September, 2025. Indigenous groups and politicians have condemned a violent neo-Nazi attack on a First Nations protest camp in Naarm, Melbourne. Camp Sovereignty, located at so-called King's Domain, was attacked shortly after the so-called March for Australia rally in the CBD, an anti-immigration event attended by racist and far-right groups opposed to migration and multiculturalism. Several men have been charged in relation to the assault, which resulted in serious injuries to patrons of the protest camp. Last Saturday, members and supporters of Camp Sovereignty gathered in defiance of the violent assault. Kortagalung elder Uncle Robbie Thorpe says that the far-right attackers who stormed Camp Sovereignty last month fear what the camp stands for. Organised by Miss Kanina, Saturday's event included speeches, music and a smoking ceremony. A national day of action in response to the attack on Camp Sovereignty has also been called for this Saturday, the 13th of September, with rallies and marches being held across all major cities.
In other news this week, South Australian GPs are speaking out against new proposed restrictions on abortion access. It comes following Independent MP and former One Nation member Sarah Game planning to introduce a bill on Friday limiting abortion access after 23 weeks. The RAC GP South Australian Chair, Dr. Sian Goodson, said that decisions on abortion should be made by patients in consultation with healthcare professionals. Abortion services are essential healthcare, and we strongly oppose these plans, she said. It's critical we keep working towards affordable and accessible abortion care across Australia, and these proposed changes are a step in the wrong direction. The RAC GP's submission to the 2022 Senate inquiry called for key changes, including harmonising state and territory legislation for medical and surgical termination and making the full range of contraceptive options accessible and affordable for all patients. The following year, the College also threw its support behind changes to improve access to medical abortion across Australia, particularly for women living in rural and remote communities. Also in the news, the Global Samud flotilla is continuing on its way to Gaza, trying to break the Israeli blockade on the Palestinian enclave where a famine has been declared. Vessels arrived in Sidi Bou Said, Tunisia on Sunday, September 7th, the last stop on their journey before continuing on to Gaza in a few days. A number of prominent politicians and activists are participating in the flotilla, including climate campaigner Greta Thunberg and former mayor of Barcelona, Ada Colau. Four Italian parliamentarians are also set to join. One of the activists on the Samud flotilla is Ilya Belikis, a Malaysian education project coordinator for the NGO Sinta Salam Malaysia. Ilya shared that we know one day Palestine will be free. We may not know how, but perhaps this is the way that Allah shows us that true liberation comes when we unite, not only as Muslims, but as humanity. Together, beyond culture, religion, and belief, we declare that this land is ours to protect, not theirs to take.
In other news, Pacific Islanders have kicked off their annual Summit of the Solomon Islands, with climate change and security expected to take center stage amid the battle for influence in the region between China and the United States. The week-long gathering began in Honiara on Monday with a meeting of groups' small island states. The leaders of the 18-member forum, including Australia and New Zealand, will head to the seaside settlement of Munda for a retreat on Thursday. Divavesi Waka, the Secretary General of Pacific Island Forum, said this year's meeting will cover regional priorities, including climate change, ocean governance, security, and economic resilience. These are not just policy issues. They are lived realities for our people, Waka states. At this year's forum, the Pacific Island leaders are expected to sign the Fiji-proposed Ocean of Peace Declaration, which the country's Prime Minister, Sitiveni Rabuka, says comes as the Pacific region has endured catastrophic calamities caused by climate change, as well as its rich resources exploited by many. Also in the news, on September 3rd through 5th, the biannual Queer Displacements Conference was held in the City Tower and was the first and only event held in the Asia-Pacific region that focused on issues directly relating to displacement within the LGBTQ+ community. This conference offers a unique platform that highlighted the stories and lived experiences of queer people, aimed to build solidarity, support, and justice. The 2025 conference discussed potential solutions to challenges regarding the intersection of forced displacement and criminalization amongst queer people. And finally, in the headlines, devastated family and friends of two young boys killed in a stabbing attack in Melbourne are called on police for answers and protection. Authorities say a 12-year-old boy and a 15-year-old boy were fatally stabbed in Cobble Bank in Melbourne's West. Albino Akuang, whose only son, 15-year-old Dao, was killed overnight, says he rushed back from work after hearing about the stabbing from his daughter and was kept in the dark by police until Sunday morning. The victim of Dao Akuang was walking home with friends after refereeing a basketball match. His father said multiple tragedies had affected his community, alleging four kids in 2 weeks had been killed. "I am talking in front of cameras right now on behalf of my community. This is happening to us," he said. "Similar incidents keep happening. There's no answer from police." And emotionally, Allure, a friend of the Akuang family, says the boys didn't deserve to die. "We needed justice, especially for those children, 12 and 15 years old," she said. These have been the news headlines for Tuesday, the 9th of September, 2025. You're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from so-called Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalization intersect where we're both disabled, it doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM, or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, where about?
Feminisms in their multitudes.
First Nations sovereignty.
Land back.
Trans liberation. Poo-poo on the turfs.
Abolition.
Anti-racism.
Sex worker rights.
South liberation.
Disability justice.
Anti-imperialism.
Decolonisation.
An end to borders.
Workers' justice.
And so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
Woo! Woo!
Public Forum. Cancel AUKUS, no war. Sunday, the 21st of September at 2:30 p.m. at the Victorian Trades Hall. AUKUS threatens our security, peace and independence. It is turning Australia into a major US military base and launching pad for US-led war in the region. The Australian government is spending more than $368 billion over the next 30 years on AUKUS submarines, instead of funding social services, climate action and sovereign manufacturing industries and long-term jobs. What alternatives are there in a global climate of big powers, military build-up and growing tensions? Come to the forum. Cancel AUKUS, no war. 21st September, 2:30 p.m. at Victorian Trades Hall to hear more about AUKUS and how we can organise to stop it. The event will also be live streamed via the Facebook page No AUKUS Coalition Victoria, a 3CR supporter.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Services Australia.
Job service providers from around the country who cut people off their social security life support are convening at Hotel Sofitel in Melbourne CBD on September the 17th for a conference and gala. The AUWU and Anti-Poverty Centre invite you to stand in protest at this punitive event of private companies profiting off the poor. Please stand with us at 8:30 a.m. and or 5:30 p.m. to protest this event and their industry. That's September 17th at 25 Collins Street in the city. These subcontracted industries profiting off our poverty have to go. We demand an end to this injustice that is harming those who are already struggling against the system. The AUWU and Anti-Poverty Centre are 3CR supporters.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast on 8:55 a.m. and we are now joined by Jessica, who has been a member of the Australian Unemployed Workers Union since it was founded, but has also been an activist since the 70s. In 2014, Jessica helped form a local AUWU branch in Wonthaggi, where they picketed job centres to support their members. Now she's on age pension and says she can't believe that we are still fighting Howard-era payments under the poverty line and the Morrison era of punitive penalty systems. And Jess joins us on the show to talk about the upcoming picket in the announcement that we just heard, which is being organised by the Australian Unemployed Workers Union to protest the National Employment Services Association's annual conference. And just a content warning before our discussion, there may be discussions of mental health and self-harm and suicide ideation. So if you need to call one of the support lines, you can call Lifeline on 131114, the Suicide Callback Service on 1300 659 467. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander callers can call 139276, and there is also QLife on 1800 184 527. Welcome to 3CR, Jessica.
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us so early in the morning. I was wondering if you could start by just telling us a bit more about the organising work of the Australian Unemployed Workers Union.
Yeah, well, it's a huge job because of what we're up against. But basically, yeah, solidarity wins out. And so what we do is just try and get people together in the area to sort of to fight back. But also we run an advice line, which at the moment is running on emails. So people, if they are having trouble with their job agency, can just contact us. I'll give you the email address at the end. But, yeah, we're also, of course, commenting through Breadline at our show on 3CR and through other means on really a sort of cataclysm that's really happening amongst the agencies that are actually implementing the punishment on our members and many other people as well.
Mm. Yeah, can you tell us more about these agencies? I imagined many of them will be at the conference next week. So what can you tell us about how they are causing harm to people in the community and how they are profiteering from poverty?
Yeah, well, exactly right. So it's really, again, a Morrison era implementation which allowed these job agencies to sort of handle the whole process of us receiving payments, so that you have to engage with them in a whole variety of ways, whether it's online, usually face-to-face, and you have to go through multiple interviews, sometimes courses and so on. Now, that it sounds as if that's helpful, but the trouble is it really is just ticking boxes for them. And in the process, they've been given the power to cut people's payments. So if you, for example, receive a text saying you have an appointment and the appointment is yesterday, in other words, through incompetence, they sent you it after the date that you're supposed to go in, you will have your payment cut. And it can be suspended or it can be cancelled, which, of course, means you have to apply again. So now, there's been an ombudsman investigation, and they found that this whole process of people having their payments cut through no fault of their own, in most cases, does not align with its legislative intent. And so there's been a comment in a recent report, if the function of this targeted compliance framework is to penalise people, it's fulfilling its role. So that's happening. And then, of course, it's been in the news this week that the robo-debt victims are going to get more compensation. So it's really, I just don't understand how they're still able to run this system. Mm. That 350,000 people have had their payments suspended in the first quarter of this year.
Mm. Yeah, and we've been hearing so many conversations about the impact that this has when we're operating in such a punitive system that, like you said, punishes people through no fault of their own, through incompetence and the systems not working correctly. And, you know, last week we were speaking to the Anti-Poverty Centre about this as well. So, I was wondering if you could talk more about just the impact that this has on people. You know, we've heard so much about the victims of robo-debt, but in terms of the daily stresses and the pressure to keep up with their obligations and to make appointments and tick all the boxes, I was wondering if you could tell us more about that.
Yeah, well, it's really overpowering. When we had our branch in Wonsaggi, a woman turned up in tears because she couldn't work out why she was getting this constant sending of appointments, messages and so on. It turned out she'd been streamed onto basically a high harassment level, but her children weren't getting the same amount of contact from the job centre. And so that kind of thing happens. Of course, we immediately recommended that she got a three-month break from having to fulfil these obligations. And so that's the kind of thing you can do, but it just really impacts on people's lives. I was speaking to someone when we, at the anti-poverty summit we had earlier in the year in June in Brisbane, and he said just the process of asking a question about his job plan, which is sort of the first thing they do, they set you up with a job plan. He just asked a question and the job centre worker just folded up her papers and said, this interview is finished, and then he found that his payments had been terminated. Mm. So, again, it doesn't have to be a sort of a fiery interchange or anything. It can just be asking a question, and that can mean that you're punished.
Mm. And it just means that there's literally nothing that people can do, is there?
Well, you can actually immediately contact them if your payment's been suspended. In most cases, it is something which you can have overturned, and that's the kind of thing we do at the Unemployed Workers Union, just sort of advise people to just respond quickly and get back onto it. But that whole process, if you've had a suspension and if you've got your rent due, that could mean that you're out of your place or you're regarded as a bad tenant and that goes on your record. So there are a lot of long-term problems with these suspensions, and also the idea of reducing your payments, I think, is very vicious as well.
Mm. So let's talk about the action that's been called for next Wednesday. It's a morning and evening picket, I believe, outside the NESA conference, which is due to take place at the Sofitel Hotel on Collins Street in the CBD. What can you tell us about this picket that's been called, Jess?
Okay. Yeah. Well, the exciting thing is we've had a supporter coming down from Wollongong for it, which is incredible. She's coming down on a whole variety of public transport because she feels so passionately. She's been on the payments on JobSeeker for 9 years, but the practical things are that they're actually having their start at the first day of the conference. It actually continues on for the second day. And at about 9:30, the minister, Amanda Rishworth, is due to be speaking. I mean, last year we actually gave one of the job centres an award for being the worst job centre for that year. In other words, the most payment suspensions and penalties were issued by this company. Now, at this thing next week, they're going to actually be giving each other awards themselves. So that's the reason we're going to be there in the evening at 5:30, because there's a gala awards dinner. So, yeah, as the report says, if the function of this system is to punish people, they're fulfilling their role, so they're giving each other awards.
Yeah. And so it would be great then to have so many people outside, you know, making sure that the way in which these systems and job centres are punishing people, like, it's visible, they can't escape. So if there are people who want to join the picket, have you got any information for them in terms of where they can go to find out the details, to keep updated with what's happening?
Yeah, well, we have got, we're madly working on a flyer right now, which is going to be distributed. We've also got Facebook event pages. I'm not sure the best way to sort of communicate those because I know that to read out an event page is about, link is about the worst thing you can do on radio.
That's okay. We can put it in the show notes for after so people can.
That would be great. Yeah. Well, just to contact us via our website, auw.org.au, and then put, you know, if you want to need to find out specific info, then, yeah, contact us through that. Yes, so we'll be there twice during that, on the 17th, and then, of course, we will continue to sort of to chase this whole system because, again, it's in the news constantly now, and I don't know how long the whole situation, the government, you know, its position is is completely untenable as far as I can see.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show, Jessica. I'm sure we'll be hearing more about these pickets on 3CR. For listeners, Breadline is a show that is by the unemployed for the unemployed, and that's on Mondays from 6 to 6:30 p.m. So stay tuned. But in the meantime, thanks so much for joining us, Jessica, and we'll pop all that information on our website for listeners to access after the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Cheers.
We've been speaking to Jessica from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union about the upcoming picket that's taking place outside the Sofitel Hotel on Collins Street. So that will begin at 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday, the 17th of September. We are going to go to a song now, I believe. Juliet, do you want to tell us what song is coming up?
Yeah, so up next we're going to be listening to a new release by Looper J, who is a NAM-based artist who fuses violin and computer sounds in their music. And this song is entitled Some Kind of Glory.
Like it.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and that was the song Some Kind of Glory by Lupa J. We are now joined by Zelda from Disrupt Wars, who is here to tell us about the snap action that was held last Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. outside the Indonesian embassy to demand an end to the persecution of West Papuans, the release of all political prisoners, and the protection of Sayang Matabayan, a pro-democracy leader and mother of four. Welcome to Tuesday Breakfast, Zelda.
Hi, good morning, Fong.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us on the show this morning. Could you start by giving us a bit of background into the protests that have been happening in Sorong?
Sure. The protest erupted on the 27th of August, and it was about the transfer of four political prisoners. So these were four people who literally sought peace talks with the Indonesian government. They presented themselves to the police in April of this year saying, we want to start a peace dialogue with the government about the future of West Papua. Several days later, they were arrested, these four people, and charged with treason. So literally trying to speak about peace in West Papua is considered an act of treason. So these four people have been in custody since April. And in August, the government announced its intention to transfer them away from the West Papua to another island, to the island of Ambon. And this has been a consistent strategy by Indonesian judicial services, is to transfer political prisoners away from West Papua, where they will be isolated and demoralised, and they won't have access to free lawyers and family and friends, networks, and where they can't, be part of a mobilisation outside of the prison. Mm-hmm. So there was opposition to this transfer, as there have been with other prisoner transfers. And there are currently many West Papuans serving life sentences for treason, for nothing more complicated than declaring that they want an independent West Papua, or seeking a peace process. So these four prisoners were due to be transferred on the 27th of August, and there was a rally called to protest transfer. People at that rally became enraged, and some people attacked government buildings, including the governor's residence. So some windows were smashed, some doors were broken down. I mean, very minor damage in the scheme of things. And on that day, on the 27th of August, the police put around the word that they believed that Sayang Matabayan was behind this property destruction. Of course, she had nothing to do with it, but Sayang Matabayan is a very popular independence and pro-democracy leader in the city of Sorong. So from around midday on Wednesday, when the property damage started to happen, we became aware that the police were hunting for Sayang.
Yeah, and so what do we know about the situation now? I know that last week you organised a snap action outside the Indonesian embassy to call for the release of political prisoners, but also for the protection of Sayang Matabayan. So do we know where she is? Is the Indonesian state still hunting for her? And what do we know of the current state of the prisoners who were transferred in late August?
The four transferred prisoners are still, they were transferred, and they are still in detention and awaiting trial in the city of Makassar, in Ambon, which is where protesters recently set fire to the parliament building. And the claim was that they were going to move them because Sorong wasn't safe. Now, it's safer than Makassar, let's say, where the government building just was burnt to the ground. So on the 27th of August, they did go and raid Sayang's house. They didn't find her, but they did arrest her husband, and they arrested 33 other West Papuan activists. So although those arrests were in response to the rally that happened pardon me, the rally that happened that day, it was clearly a premeditated, series of raids and arrests, mm-hmm. because they went after known organisers and activists. So they had, they had prepared a list. They had prepared that, at some point they were going to go after these people. And that was the day that they chose to do it. And they didn't find Sayang, but they did find her husband and arrested him. Since then, pro-democracy advocates and human rights lawyers have managed to secure the release of those prisoners. I think all but three or four of them have now been released, including Sayang's husband. So that is a really great outcome. One of the things that led to that outcome was our protest at the Indonesian consulate. So there was one here in Nam, there was one in Canberra, and there was one in Garamilla or Darwin, all at the same time. So those were three locations on this continent where protests at consulates and embassies happened simultaneously.
You said before that these these activists were arrested and accused of treason simply for seeking out peace talks. What can you tell us about this ongoing systemic state violence and brutality committed by the Indonesian state against West Papuan activists and leaders? And has there been any response from the international community, not from activists like yourself, but from governments and other heads of state?
Governments and heads of state tend to side with other governments and heads of state. Mm. Look at what Israel's doing to Gaza. And then governments have not been very loud in their condemnation of what is clearly a genocide. And the situation is similar in West Papua. However bad the human rights violations become, however many civilians are persecuted, incarcerated or murdered by the Indonesian army. We certainly don't see the Australian government speaking up about it. In fact, in 2006, the Australian government signed a treaty with Indonesia promising that Australia would not speak about West Papua and would not speak about anything that challenged the so-called sovereignty of the Indonesian state. So basically, Australia promised not to make any comments about anything that's happening inside Indonesia. Mm. Australia relies on Indonesia to help them, stop so-called people smugglers. So, and that's a foreign policy priority that's way, way above the human rights of people in West Papua or indeed in the rest of Indonesia. To answer your earlier question, Sayang is still in hiding. So, although her husband's been released, and that's a hopeful sign, we know that we can't trust the Indonesian government. If it says it's not going to prosecute her, we know we can't trust that. So there's still a question mark over her future.
Mm. And if there are listeners who want to support the work that's happening in West Papua to support Papuan activists. I know that the snap action was last week, but what other actions can people take?
We run a fundraiser to support activists like Sayang. So there are a number of civil rights, civil society actors who we support materially, and that fundraiser is called Peace in Papua, and it's on Chuffed. So if you go to if you Google Peace in Papua Chuffed, you'll find it. Mm. So that's a way that people can materially support people like Sayang. And other than that, just keep your eye out because there will be more West Papuan events. Do look out for there's a number of groups who activate for West Papua. Fly the flag. West Papuans love seeing their flag flown in other places. So, and I think one thing that Australia has done well, or Australians have done well, is that in the midst of the pro-Palestine protests, we have consistently raised West Papua. as a close neighbour and as people who are also experiencing a genocide, you know, it's a very different case. But there is a gradual erasure of Indigenous West Papua, of their lands, of cultures, and of human beings.
Mm. And Zelda, I guess like what you were saying before, where governments and heads of state side with each other and ensure to hold on to their power, you know, we need to stand in solidarity with Indigenous communities all over the world, whether that's Palestine here in this colony or in West Papua. So thank you so much for telling us more about what's happening in West Papua and for giving us some meaningful actions that we can take. I'm sure we'll be speaking to you again soon about other updates regarding the situation in West Papua. But for now, Zelda, thanks so much for joining us on Tuesday Breakfast.
Yeah, you're so welcome, Fung. Thank you.
We've been speaking to Zelda from Disrupt Wars about last week's snap action outside the Indonesian embassy to stand in solidarity with Indigenous West Papuans being persecuted and brutalised by the Indonesian state, and to support the Peace in Papua campaign that Zelda spoke to us about. You can head to the website chuffed, that's chuffed.org/project/peace-in-Papua, and we'll make sure to include that link in our show notes if you'd like to provide material support to West Papuan activists being brutalized by the Indonesian state. We are going to hear now a very short speech that took place at the snap action last week. And this is a speech from Pippin, who is an Indonesian woman who spoke last week calling for solidarity to free West Papua.
Acknowledging the traditional owners of the land we stand on today, I pay respect to elders, past and present, and I affirm that sovereignty was never ceded, always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Protect Sayang Mandabayan. As one of Rakyat Indonesia, I stand with you in struggle. We know what it means to live under the weight of a ruling class that steals our labor, our land and our freedom. The same system that unleashes police and military violence to silence our voices. Today, we say clearly, free all political prisoners in Papua and the militarism and police brutality and protect Sayang Mandabayan. End the killings. Recognize the rights of the Papuan people to self-determination. Their struggle is not separate from ours. It is part of the same fight against colonialism, against exploitation, against the rule of the few over the many. We, as rakyat, as people, as working class, refuse to be divided. From workers, fisher folks, students, women, Indigenous peoples, we are united as people. We know solidarity is our greatest power. From Jakarta to Jayapura, from Melbourne to Manokwari, we lift our voices together. The ruling class wants us to believe resistance is dangerous, but the real danger is silence. The real violence is the state's. It's state's violence. And the real power is ours. When we organize, when we fight, when we refuse to bow to the ruling class, it's time for us to make a change. So let us carry this fire forward. Free the prisoners, end the killings. Let Papuan live in freedom and dignity. Let the people rise until justice is ours. Terima kasih.
That was Pippin, an Indonesian woman, speaking at the recent snap action outside the Indonesian embassy. We'll be back with our next interview after these messages.
Have you heard about the news that's come out of the NT?
What news? Fires, floods, chicken flu, what?
No, the payouts.
Payouts?
Compensation for what you went through.
No.
Well, I reckon you should go for it. You deserve every cent and more. I'll back you. You know it.
Oh, sis, you're the best.
Yes, I am.
If you are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander and were removed from family or community in the Northern Territory before 1 July 1978 or in the ACT or Jervis Bay before 11th of May 1989, you may be eligible for the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme. If you know of a family member who was removed but passed away after the scheme was announced on the 5th of August 2001, you may be eligible to apply for redress for them. Call LinkUp Victoria, VACA, on 037 002 3700 and leave a message for a callback or contact the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme on 1800 566 111.
A 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM and this is Tuesday Breakfast. And up next, we're chatting to Laura Billings, who is the Campaigns Director at Parents for Climate, which is a climate advocacy organisation representing parents, carers and kids with the shared goal of a safe future for our children. Laura is also a co-organiser of her local Parents for Climate group on Wadawurrung country in the Bellarine, Geelong Surf Coast area. And Laura's here to chat to us about the need for an emissions reduction target of net zero for 2035 and the actions that Parents for Climate is taking to advocate for this goal. But welcome to Tuesday Breakfast, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for making the time to come on air and chat to us about this. Well, to start off, Laura, could you tell us a little bit about who Parents for Climate is and the focus of the group's advocacy?
100%, yeah. So we were formed by six regional metro rural mums about 6 years ago, so we're a pretty new organisation. But it was after the 2019 school strikes that, yeah, one of the founders was sort of standing there looking around going, where are all the parents? Like, we need to be standing up and fighting for this and doing more for our kids. So, yeah, that's how it was formed, and we've really quickly grown to over 25,000 supporters nationwide, and we've got over 25 local groups in every state and territory around Australia. So, yeah, I mean, what we're advocating for is we just want a safe climate future for our kids. So we know we're all experiencing climate change now, and every fraction of a degree of warming is going to alter that safety and that reality and that future that our kids are going to have. So we're trying to get urgent and strong action from government and industry to back that.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, that's what we all know that we need. And I think, yeah, so amazing as well that, you know, you guys were inspired by the school strike activists and formed your group from that. And it sounds like it's really just grown from strength to strength, yeah, now having 25,000 people involved. And you touched on the fact that there's a lot of local groups across the country who form part of Parents for Climate. And, yeah, I know that you're part of your own local group in the Geelong Bellarine Surf Coast region. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got involved and, about your local group?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I've got a bit of a, like, unusual background. I mean, I spent over two decades working in big multinational organisations in different sort of marketing roles, and I only really became aware of just how bad, I guess, the climate crisis was about 5 years ago. And yeah, I was like, oh, wow, I've got to do something about this. You know, I've got young kids, a 6 and a 11-year-old who are out there dancing to K-pop demons at the moment. And, you know, yeah, just the urgency of the situation. I was like, I have to find my people. I have to, you know, work out what I can do to make change. And, you know, climate change is part of a systemic issue. So it can feel very overwhelming trying to do things as an individual, but it's really through that collective action and working together, particularly on trying to reform policies and the way we're going about things in the country, that can make a really big difference. So I connected with a friend actually locally in Ocean Grove, and she's like, oh, I'm part of this group. I'm like, oh, that sounds like my sort of, you know, thing, or the thing I'm interested in, and went along and, yeah, met some of the other mums and parents there, and they were just so warm and welcoming, and it all really sort of evolved from there, to be honest. We've got a really active, vibrant community down here, all working together, yeah, for a safe climate future for our kids.
Yeah, no, that's so awesome. And I think, you know, it really has to come from that grassroots, you know, that activism to bring people together and actually stand up for, you know, the values that we believe in, and, you know, to, yeah, fight for that future that matters for the whole community. And I know that recently, so Parents for Climate is very involved in calling for net zero for by 2035, and that the organisation recently sent a legal letter to the Minister for Climate Change and Energy, Chris Bowen, calling for net zero by 2035. But can you tell us a little bit about what this letter means, and, you know, what the legal case for net zero by 2035 is?
Yeah, 100%. So we sent the letter, and I guess following the recent International Court of Justice advisory opinion, that's probably almost a month ago, there was a ruling that I guess really changed the way that we interpret, the analysis and the Australian law. So through that, it basically says that we have to limit warming to 1.5 degrees of warming, otherwise it could expose the government to legal and reputational risk. So, before the ICJ opinion, the Climate Change Authority published a draft advice on the 2035 targets that they were capable of limiting temperature rise to 2 degrees. So Australia has, it's committed to net zero by 2050 target, but it must, you know, obviously now submit this 2035 target, and science tells us that to limit warming to that 1.5 degree, we have to have a net zero. So that's what we're asking for from the government.
Yeah, definitely. I think, it really does feel like, the 2050 target is so far off, and there's so many risks in, you know, not taking action and trying to reduce our carbon emissions much, much sooner than that. And, I think, you know, by putting it out there in that legal framework, that is, you know, a really helpful tool to actually get the government to pay attention. Just in terms of, other work that you guys are focused on at Parents for Climate, you know, how can people get involved in the movement and support your work if they're, listening to us now?
Yeah, great. Well, yeah, there's a number of ways that people can connect. So I'd highly recommend they go to our website, which is www.parentsforclimate.org, and that's where they can go and sign up to join, where they'll be, you know, on our list, so that they can get all of our emails and updates and everything like that. We've also got very active social media channels on Facebook and Insta, LinkedIn, etc. So we're easy to find on there as well if people want to connect. But yeah, highly recommend to sign up on our website to make sure you're getting all of the updates and all of the comms, because there's a lot going on, particularly at the moment. So we need as many parents connected and using their voice as possible.
Yeah, definitely. We'll definitely include all of those links in the show notes so that people can, find out more. And, looking forward at the rest of the year, Laura, what is next for campaigns at Parents for Climate?
Yeah, well, we've still got a way to go on the 2035 target. So we know that the National Climate Risk Assessment Report is coming out this week. So we're getting ready to, report and respond on that. You know, I think there'll be quite a few people that are feeling quite anxious and distressed when that report comes out, because it will highlight basically the risks associated with different levels of warming. So I think that's another really important report to come out, just to say why net zero by 2035 is the critical target we need to hit. So yeah, we're doing some work around that. And then obviously with the announcement coming out, we'll still be campaigning around the target. We're looking at launching an air pollution campaign later in the year. So yeah, people might think that we've got quite clean air, but, you know, the, I guess, challenge that we've got with the air quality in Australia, it causes a lot of health issues in children. So we're really wanting to make people aware of the risk of pollution and what we can all do to try and play an active part in reducing that. So, yeah, we'll be getting on to that, and we've also still campaigning on our solar, our learning campaign, which is about getting solar and batteries in every school and early childhood, kindergarten throughout Australia. So, yeah, loads and loads of opportunity for parents to step up and get involved, whether they want to join a local group, whether they want to use their voice in media, through their networks, to advocate for, yeah, I guess, the policy changes and the changes that we're wanting to see. But, yeah, just highly recommend. I'm sure there's lots of parents out there that are, well, we know there are, obviously, with our network, really concerned about climate change. It's here, it's happening. You know, it's altering the way that we're doing things. It's affecting our kids' sports. It's affecting the cost of living, the price of our food, our energy bills, all of that. So, you know, there's really so many upsides to, you know, getting active and actually acting on climate versus the opposite. So,
yeah, definitely. And it sounds like, Laura, you know, Parents for Climate is both focusing on, you know, what are the impacts of climate change moving forward, and, you know, focusing on those targets in the future, but also trying to look at, you know, what the issues are today, and, you know, particularly with pollution and, you know, also, you know, facilitating that transition to renewable energy. So it sounds like, you know, you've got so many wonderful campaigns running, and, yeah, we wish you all the best in all of them this year.
That's great. Thanks so much, Juliet.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
No worries, Laura. Well, thank you so much for chatting to us today. And, we really appreciate your time.
Great. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you so much. Well, we've been speaking to Laura from Parents for Climate, and we've been chatting about the need for net zero by 2035 to ensure a safe future for younger generations. And you can find out more at www.parentsforclimate.org or at Parents for Climate on Instagram. And up next, we're going to be speaking to our next guest here on Tuesday Breakfast, who will be Jamie Jeffrey, a member of the Albert Out of Victoria campaign, which was initiated by Free Palestine Coalition NAM. And Jamie is a lifelong human rights activist who plays a leading role in several pro-Palestine and anti-militarism groups. And Jamie's back on Tuesday Breakfast to talk about an event taking place tomorrow at Trades Hall, which is the launch of the Future Fund report with a screening of the film To Kill a War Machine. Well, welcome back to Tuesday Breakfast, Jamie.
Hi, Juliet. Thank you. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, well, we're very happy to have you, and, really do appreciate you making time out of your morning to come on air and chat to us, and yeah, to come back on the show as well as one of our repeat guests. But yeah, to start off with, the Future Fund, of course, is the country's single largest financial asset, with more than $300 billion currently being managed by the fund on behalf of the federal government. But yeah, what do we know about the transparency and accountability regarding the fund's investment decisions?
Well, we know the outcome of their investment decisions because they're required by law to provide the information. So, but we don't, there's not a lot of transparency around how they actually make those decisions. But what we do know is as at December last year, 2024, the fund held almost $2.7 million in Elbit Systems, Elbit being the largest private Israeli weapons manufacturer that is helping the Israeli government drive the genocide in Gaza. And that represents an increase of almost 450% since October 2023, which clearly shows that Elbit and the Future Fund are profiting from genocide. And just a few days ago, Anton Issa from Deep Cut News also pointed out that the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Land and Sea Future Fund and the Housing Australia Future Fund are also have investments in Elbit Systems, which brings the total amount invested to about $3.1 million. The Future Fund also invests in other weapons companies that are supporting the genocide. Companies like Lockheed Martin, which actually makes the F-35s that Israel's using to bomb Gaza, BAE and Boeing. And the shares, the share value of those companies is just increasing astronomically. So they're all profiting from the genocide.
Yeah, no, it is just staggering, you know, thinking about those numbers and, you know, just how much profit these companies are, you know, gaining at the expense of, so many people's lives. And, we, in terms of Elbit out of Victoria, you know, you've been doing a lot of research and you've revealed that the Future Fund currently holds about $600 million in various weapons corporations, including Elbit Systems and Lockheed Martin, as you just mentioned. But yeah, what can you tell us about the fund's investment in these companies and just a bit more about, you know, exactly how they've profited from the genocide in Gaza?
Well, there's a huge demand by Israel for more and more weapons and munitions and so on. And so, and of course, other wars that are going on in the world, in Ukraine, in Sudan, in various places around the world. So it's the sale of weapons that is, increasing their share value and their profits. These companies are dependent on war, and they're very big and powerful companies that have huge influence on governments. That's the model, basically. To get back to your earlier question about transparency, though, the Future Fund is run by a board that's appointed by the government. But the government maintains that, you know, the board is independent and is arm's length. But the board makes decisions about which companies are in and which are, you know, excluded, and they don't provide any information about how they reach those decisions. Elbit Systems was excluded back in 2021 because it bought another weapons manufacturer that was making cluster munitions, and then it was quietly, you know, reintroduced, the super fund reinvested in 2023, and there was no transparency around that decision. So whilst the government has, appoints the board, it can also give directives to that board. So it has given directives in the past about the board needing to
manage the fund in a way that basically it makes a profit, but potentially it could give directives to divest from Elbert and divest from weapons, and it's choosing not to. So the government is also not being transparent here.
Yeah, definitely not. And, you know, when it comes to making these decisions, particularly around these investments, are there any guidelines? And have there been, you know, examples of companies that have been excluded from those investments?
Well, there are guidelines. The ESG guidelines, which are all about, you know, the ethics of the investment and the governance and so on. But the guidelines are, you know, they can still get away with being, you know, their decisions being quite opaque. But, you know, we would argue, and the Future Fund report that has been produced by the Elbert out of Victoria research team has demonstrated that investing in companies like Elbert, investing in weapons manufacturers full stop, is not consistent with those ESG guidelines, and particularly because it's a future fund. It's meant to be for the benefit of the people of so-called Australia in the future. A fund that invests in weapons which are being used to actually wipe out the future of various peoples around the world, in particular the Palestinians, is just totally unethical and totally inconsistent with those guidelines.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, there's such a contradiction there between, yeah, the guidelines and, you know, what's actually happening in practice. And, The Elbert Out of Victoria campaign is going to be, you know, continuing to hold the government and these companies to account. And I know tomorrow evening you're going to be launching the Future Fund report at an event at Trades Hall, where there's going to be a number of speakers representing Elbert Out of Victoria and Free Palestine Coalition, NAM. But yeah, tomorrow, will there be discussions focusing on any particular aspect of that report?
Well, there'll be some general discussion of the report and also of the film. So we're really keen to try and engage people a bit more deeply in discussion around these issues. And we'll also be talking about the various steps that people can take to help us put pressure on the government to put pressure on the Future Fund to change its investment strategy and divest from Elbert in particular. And other sovereign wealth funds have done that. The really notable one is Norway, which has a huge sovereign wealth fund, and it has divested. So it can be done. It can be done. And we'll be talking to people about the steps they can take to do that. The documentary To Kill a War Machine is extraordinary. It's all about Palestine Action UK's efforts to shut down Elbert in the UK. And they've shut down several Elbert factories in the UK. Just the other day, another one has shut down. So
yeah, fantastic.
I think that's four now. It's an extraordinary documentary, and we'll have an opportunity. There'll be an opportunity for people to discuss that as well. There'll be the food available for purchase from six from the Anak Banks, the Merdeka Solidarity Food Truck, and then the event itself starts at 6:30. So there'll be a few of my comrades in Elbert out of Victoria speaking about the report, then we'll show the film, and then we'll have a discussion afterwards. So it should be a really good event.
Yeah, it really sounds...
And people will need to... get themselves a ticket. Entry is free, but they need to get a ticket from Eventbrite, and the link to that is available on elbertout.colonialaus Instagram in the bio there. So we don't have many tickets left, so people get in quick.
Well, yes, they certainly should. And yeah, it sounds like there's, you know, a lot of, you know, really inspiring examples from overseas, you know, over in the UK, as you were talking about, that's a real focus of that film. And sounds like there's a lot to learn in attending the event tomorrow. Just quickly, if our listeners do want to read the actual Future Fund report, where can they find that?
Yeah, there's a link to it on the Free Palestine Coalition website.
Mm-hmm.
People can download an electronic copy or, print one out. There's a couple of options there. And it's a really great read. It's been so well written. It's very accessible. It's not hard to read. And it's actually really engrossing to just understand, in a bit more detail what's going on with this Future Fund and also more about Elbert. For example, Elbert doesn't only design and produce weapons and munitions, it designs and produces surveillance technology as well, which is also being used against the people of Gaza and in other places around the world. So Elbert really is a truly evil company, and we need to get our Future Fund to divest from it, and we need to get it out of this country. The government has signed contracts with Elbert since October 2023, in the full knowledge of Elbert's involvement in the genocide. Including a almost $1 billion contract with a subcontract to Hanwha to build the turrets, make the turrets for the infantry fighting vehicles that Hanwha is building at Avalon. So our government's in it up to its neck.
Yeah, they certainly are. And, it really sounds like through, sitting down and reading the report that our listeners can, really get into the fine details of, what's actually going on and, be able to understand, all this information that the government, does try to keep hidden from us. We really appreciate you coming on this morning, Jamie, and taking the time to talk about these really important issues.
Thank you, Juliet. My pleasure.
Thank you so much. Well, we've been speaking to Jamie Jeffrey from Elbert out of Victoria, who spoke about the Future Fund report, which is being launched tomorrow, Wednesday, 10th of September, at 6 p.m. at Trades Hall, which is at 54 Victoria Street in Carlton. For more information, you can also follow at elbertout.colonialoz on Instagram. And up next, we're going to play a song for you. This is a song called Seahorses by Odette, and it's from a 2024 release.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast on 8:55 AM. And up next, we're going to be chatting to Rochelle Francis, who is a board member at Democracy in Colour, an independent nonpartisan organisation advocating for racial justice. And Rochelle also works as a community lawyer. And Rochelle's going to be joining us today to talk about the threats posed by the recent so-called March for Australia and what commitments are needed from our governments moving forward to promote a more inclusive democracy. But thank you so much for joining us this morning, Rochelle.
Morning, Julia. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, we're really excited to have you on. And to start off with, could you tell us a little bit about who Democracy in Colour is and kind of the aims of their work?
So Democracy in Colour, we're a racial justice organisation and we're building a national movement led by and for people of colour to resist hate and create a future where every community can thrive. We believe that we all deserve that and that our future generations deserve that and that it's going to take all of us to build that shared future. So how do we do that? There's three core pillars of Democracy in Colour's work. Our work looks like movement building, advocacy and campaigning, and our solidarity work.
Yeah, no, that's, I think, all, you know, so many important aspects of fighting for racial justice. And, yeah, I've certainly admired Democracy in Colour's work for a long time. And I think, you know, we've only seen in the last few weeks, you know, how important it is to have voices standing up against racism. I think so many people across the country have been really concerned to see the protests on the 31st of August when, you know, so many, quite a large number of people marched in the March for Australia protests against what they deemed as the issue of mass immigration. But can you talk to, you know, first off, like, you know, what threat do these protests pose to our society and specifically to people of colour and First Nations people?
Yeah, Julia, you're so right. The rallies on Sunday, they weren't about patriotism. They were about racism and neo-Nazi rhetoric. And we saw neo-Nazis and extremist groups marching openly alongside politicians. And the message was really clear. Migrants and refugees were being scapegoated. We saw that First Nations people were directly attacked. It wasn't a fringe event. It was a national mobilisation of hate and one that we can't ignore. And this kind of mobilisation that we saw last Sunday didn't emerge out of thin air, didn't emerge out of nothing. For the past few years, we've seen that Australia's grappled with serious economic and social problems, the impact of pandemic lockdowns, growing housing crisis, the rising cost of living. And it's a direct result of a political environment where anti-immigration sentiment is encouraged by mainstream political figures and the media. We've seen politicians blaming migrants for housing, jobs, and crime. And police have also been enablers in the way that they make decisions about who to police and how to use their powers. And we've seen parts of the mainstream media reporting and repeating these narratives and giving extremists a platform to spread racist anti-immigration rhetoric and to spread really misleading claims about immigration numbers. And so these institutions are responsible to various degrees. Communities of colour and migrants already contribute more to the economy and to society than they take. And when leaders and media scapegoat migrants and people of colour, they make it easier for extremists to spread hate. That's what we saw.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, it's really concerning as well to see just, you know, the level of this spread of misinformation, you know, that's, as you've said, coming from our politicians and coming from media, that, you know, so many people are, you know, buying into that. And when, yeah, you know, it's just completely, you know, not based on facts at all. And, you know, it's communities of colour and First Nations communities as well who are impacted by issues of housing and, you know, the pandemic and cost of living crisis as well. Like, it's not, yeah, I think it just can so often be such a baffling kind of logic that these groups are advocating as well, which is, yeah, really frustrating. Yeah, can you maybe speak a little bit to, you know, how misinformation is kind of, and, you know, how I guess how we can tackle that moving forward?
Yeah, hate doesn't solve any of the problems that Australians are facing. It doesn't build a home in the housing crisis or put food on the table where families are facing record high grocery bills, and it doesn't fix the climate crisis or create good jobs, and there shouldn't be any place for hate in today's society. It really just allows the people in power to avoid accountability. And so all of us who value democracy should really be alarmed by what we saw last Sunday, and it should be, the marches should be an urgent wake-up call to all of us, and we need to demand better from the media and from politicians. We want to see governments showing leadership and denouncing extremist groups, investing in First Nations justice, the racist attack on camp sovereignty that we saw. It's really shameful that I mean the non-Aboriginal majority in this country, let that happen in today's society. And the racism is really a result of unreckoned colonial foundations that Australia was built on. And so I think all of us have a role in rejecting hate and building an inclusive democracy. And our solidarity with Democracy in Colour, believe that our solidarity with First Nations people is critical if we're serious about defeating racism in all of its forms. And nothing changes if we don't do anything. So things that people can do are find your National Day of Action this weekend, find and support Democracy in Colour's work, demand better from media and politicians, support First Nations communities, understanding Europe Justice Commission's reports, joining the movement for treaties. Those are just some of the things that all of us can do today.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, as you're saying, you know, that solidarity is so important, and, you know, we all need to stand with First Nations people in standing up against anti-racism. And and I think, you know, that whole, you know, idea as well that, you know, this country, its roots, you know, this idea of the nation state is built on genocide and white supremacy. And, you know, I think it does require that ongoing resistance and challenge to those ideas because, yeah, you know, it does seem like this hasn't come out of nowhere, as you were saying. And, yeah, we do need to really stand up and fight back. And, yeah, I think that upcoming National Day of Action this weekend on 13th of September is, yeah, a great opportunity for people to, you know, stand together and, yeah, show that solidarity. But, yeah, just in terms of where our 3CR listeners can go to find out a bit more about Democracy in Colour's work, where would be the right places for that?
Yes, we have a website, democracyincolour.org. We're also on social media. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook. You can sign up to become a member with us. You can also sign up to donate and or to volunteer with us. There are many ways to get involved.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Rochelle, for outlining those different ways that people can engage with Democracy in Colour as a movement. And, yeah, we really appreciate your all your insights coming on air this morning with us to chat about, yeah, this threat that we're really facing.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Well, we've been chatting to Rochelle Francis from Democracy in Colour, which is a national organisation fighting against racism. And we've chatted about the threats of the recent anti-immigrant protests across the country and what's needed to make our democracy more inclusive. And you can find out more at Democracy in Colour on Instagram, or you can head to their website, democracyincolour.org, find out about ways to support the organisation, including volunteering and participating in events. We've got a few events to run through quickly for today. So, starting off tomorrow, Wednesday, 10th of September at 5:30 p.m., there's going to be a rally, Mary Beck for Palestine, taking place at the Coburg Town Hall, which is at 90 Bell Street in Coburg. Then also tomorrow on Wednesday, 10th of September, 6:30, there's the film screening To Kill a War Machine and the Future Fund report launch at Victorian Trades Hall, 54 Victoria Street, Carlton, which is what Jamie was speaking about earlier, speaking from Albert out of Victoria. And then on Friday, the 12th of September, at 6:30, there's a workshop, Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions, at 6:30 in the Democritus Workers League at 583 High Street, Northcote. And then finally, on Saturday, the 13th of September at 11 a.m, there is the National Day of Action, Sovereignty Never Ceded, taking place on the corner of Flinders Street and Swanston Street.
We know you love listening to 3CR, but we also know that many of you haven't downloaded the Community Radio Plus app yet.
The app lets you tune in anywhere and share the station with your friends.
So, show the love and share the love and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and we've had a massive show today. So starting off at 7:15, we spoke to Jess, who's a member of the Australian Unemployed Workers Union since it founded. And Jess was here on the show to talk about the upcoming picket organised by the AUWU to protest the National Employment Services Association's annual conference. And then at 7:30, we spoke to Zelda from Disrupt Wars about the recent snap action outside the Indonesian embassy to demand an end to the persecution of West Papuans, release political prisoners and to protect Sayang Mandabayan. And then at 7:45, we spoke to Laura Billings from Parents for Climate. Laura is the campaigns director at the organisation and joined us to talk about the need for an emissions reduction target of net zero by 2035 and the need to really prioritise the future of children in climate advocacy. And then finally, at 8 o'clock, we spoke to Jamie Jeffrey from Albert out of Victoria about their upcoming event taking place tomorrow where they're launching the Future Fund report and also screening the film To Kill a War Machine. And then our final interview at 8:15, we spoke to Rochelle Francis from Democracy in Colour about the threat posed to our democracy from recent anti-immigration protests and what's needed to build a more inclusive society.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find NIBS opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall, Carlton. Keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
3CR. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.